everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. We're joined by Dr. Peggy James, Dean of the College of Social Sciences and Professional Studies, and Dr. Christopher Hudspeth, Associate Professor of Philosophy at UW-Parkside. Peggy and Christopher, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And I will tell our reader, or wait, not readers, these are listeners. This is radio, John. It is radio. That we are recording this in late April. The show was airing early May. So if we say anything about the COVID pandemic, which has changed in 2 weeks, you know, please excuse us because that does change quickly. And so we're practicing the social physical distancing, recording this via some technological thing that allows us to see each other, talk to each other over the computer. In 2006, UW-Parkside was part of the American Democracy Project, which was preparing students for active participation in the 2008 election process. This is 2020. Is another edition of the election experience. Did the election experience evolve out of the American Democracy Project?
Well, actually, even though it did precede the election experience, really the American Democracy Project was more course-based and was not campus-wide and didn't really involve the community. And so even though it was definitely an integral part of the campus's commitment to civic and community engagement, it didn't directly lead to the election experience, which is a much more expansive and more integrated semester-long event.
Okay. In fact, I didn't know about the American Democracy Project at all when we were first planning the election experience. As a member of the philosophy department, I wasn't actually even involved in any of those American democracy issues, so I had no idea the thing even existed.
And Christopher, when did you join UW-Parkside?
I initially came to Parkside in 2010 as a lecturer, and in 2012, I got hired tenure track. Okay. So the fall of 2012 was my first semester as an assistant professor at Parkside.
So Peggy and Christopher, tell us, how does the election experience come about? How does it start? Where does it come from?
You mean the origin of, like, us coming up with a class?
Yeah.
Or do you mean how each year, when it appears, how it appears each year?
I would say let's start with the origin. How did the origin of the election experience come about? What was the discussion like to say, hey, here's something that would be a good thing for us to do at UW-Parkside, if that was the way the discussion went?
Peggy, do you remember? I know it happened in the summer.
Exactly.
And I know it was because you and I were talking about stuff.
And that's
but
truly,
I can't.
That's truly it. I think Christopher and I might have been the only ones in the summer that were on our floor consistently and talking to each other about just all sorts of different things, and started swimming around the idea of a course that would actually really, really engage students in the election. We originally thought it would be great as a general education course for our incoming freshmen, okay, who, you know, were just ripe to become, you know, voters, but maybe didn't have enough knowledge to really do it responsibly, and maybe then wouldn't vote at all. And also it was a chance, we thought, for our incoming freshmen to become more engaged with the campus. So not only was it focused on the election, it was essentially almost a taste of Parkside sort of an event, because it involved so many different people.
Sure.
And allowed students to be able to experience a lot of things that the campus had to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Peggy, were you director of social sciences at that point?
No, I think I was chair of the political science department.
Okay.
And then we brought it to PPL right about that time.
Okay.
Yeah, that was right after PPL actually formed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, as I recall, it really was, and it was just us brainstorming ideas on what might be a really interesting and effective way to get students to sort of see issues as they cross disciplinary boundaries and to experience the campus from different perspectives. Because one of the original goals was not merely to have it be housed in a particular place, but to have the events take place across campus so that students would be drawn, and actually community members would be drawn to different areas of campus rather than just, let's say, classrooms, to sort of, in effect, by its mere presence, to show that the conversations that take place about these issues exist throughout both the university and the community, like to physically embody that rather than just say that. So it really was a kind of brainstorming thing about how we can actually like basically use the election to engage students in the community in a more thoughtful way.
Mm-hmm. And I was kind of, it caught my attention yesterday thinking about preparing for our discussion today. And there was a story, and I didn't read the whole story, so I'm only going to tell you what the headline said, was that what we assume will be the Democratic candidate for President Joe Biden could be hurt by, was the headline, by young voters, that he's not connecting with young voters. And I thought it was interesting that Parkside, and I think you can put a lot of things behind it, that from the election experience, that our voting rate among students is very high when it's compared to the national average, correct?
That's absolutely true. We started out as a very engaged campus, but we, in the past, since we started the election experience, we have actually been on an upward trend in terms of participation of our students. That is really, at our last count in 2016, was almost unmatched by over 1,000 institutions in the United States. And so in 2016, we received the Platinum Award, which is the highest award you can get from a national association for voting and engagement. And we're one of 60 institutions out of the 1,000 who received that award. So wow. We are really engaged. There were only other two institutions in Wisconsin that received that, and that was Madison and Milwaukee. So we're right up there with our two flagship institutions.
Do you think it's a and I'm sorry to interrupt there, Christopher. I could hear you wanted to come in on that as well. Is it an issue, or why is it an issue to try to get younger people to vote?
I think that's just a perennial issue. I don't think the current generation is any different than any previous generation. Mm-hmm. This is a moment when I actually wish Professor Hansen was on the line so he could actually give us the actual demographic data and how it works out. But as I understand it, the youth don't and haven't almost ever participated at higher rates than they're doing right now. And I take it that just kind of makes a lot of sense to me. You know, when you're that particular age, you've got a lot of stuff that are important to you that are immediate and present. And honestly, I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm. So how?
I just want to interject this one thing, not drag us offside, but I want to point it. Since you started your question asking about Vice President Biden, I do want to point out that you may recall he came to campus in 2012.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And talking to the members of their staff at the time, it was because when they visited campus, they saw all the materials for the election experience and all the stuff that the students for that class were producing. And they saw how engaged the campus was, which is what brought them here during the campaign.
And that, I think that says a lot for the election experience in terms of being able to generate that desire, enthusiasm, interest in younger voters to get out and vote, that maybe without the election experience, if that's not something that's high on their priority list as a younger person, maybe they don't turn out to vote as in as strong a numbers as we have at Parkside.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was in college, and I think this has got to be a hardship for a lot of college students, especially the more traditional ones who go off to university. Most states don't make it a priority to help those students actually get the vote in, right? They actually make it hard for students who are spending most of their year in one location, but their permanent residence is someplace else, mm-hmm. right? Like voting under those conditions, I think even the state of Wisconsin right now is making it really hard if you're, let's say, a student in Madison to vote in Madison. They're making you vote at home, but of course the election takes place in November when they're actually off at school. And so I don't think we should underestimate how our society has actually discourages voting by all people. I mean, I'm reminded I have occasionally had a student from Australia in my classes here at Parkside. Australia, they have mandatory voting. You are actually fined if you do not vote, and they go out of their way to make it so that everybody can vote. This student did mail-in balloting from the United States to Australia because Australia wants everybody to vote. Mm-hmm. Whereas we don't necessarily want everybody to vote. At least that's the evidence I would suggest, given the way we put barriers to voting in place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's even, you know, right now, and by the time this airs, maybe the Racine Unified School District referendum vote will be decided. But that's an extremely close election. You know, I think if it's not tied after yesterday's recount, it's within a few votes one way or the other. And and voting myself by the mail-in ballot, I don't remember if my darling bride, Patty, put her address after she signed as a witness. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. And that's one of the topics of one of the points of contention with that election is, did the witness put the address on? And you think, holy cow, that just becomes almost, I think I read the instructions the right way, but I can't be 100% sure that, I know we signed them, we did the witness thing, But again, mm-hmm. to your point, Christopher, another hurdle in being able to cast the vote.
Actually, in our current planning for the fall, we are working with the Coalition for Dismantling Racism and Carthage College to put on, during the election experience, one of their courageous conversations that will be focused on voter suppression and the issues that people are facing, not just our young folks, but everyone has barriers, some very obvious and some very subtle, that are put up for their participation in elections. So this is a real current issue.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Dr. Peggy James, Dean of the College of Social Sciences and Professional Studies at UW-Parkside, and Dr. Christopher Hudspeth, Associate Professor of Philosophy here at UW-Parkside. When you look at the election experience course, the general studies course itself, do you see it as having the ability to set a precedent or kind of template for future event-based classes, or what's the significance of this type of course that focuses on a particular event?
I'm watching to see if, okay, I was watching to see if Peggy was going to start talking. I really did, especially when we first came up with it, I really did think it had the opportunity to be that kind of event. I remember Peggy and I having conversations about how, given that we have a four-college model at Parkside and how the presidential election only comes once every 4 years, that our college could host this kind of event on the fourth year, but then it could rotate through the other colleges on other years, mm-hmm. so that like each college could pick their sort of focus or topic. I definitely remember having those conversations. I thought it had that real potential. I think it would be problematic if you were trying to run two of these at the same time. Right. And now maybe a much larger school, you know, maybe a school with 20,000 students could pull that off. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Parkside could sustain two of these kinds of classes happening simultaneously. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I just think the number of people who are available to attend events is limited enough that I don't know. But yeah, the model, I think, can definitely be extended beyond this one. You just need to find a topic that other other colleges could sort of, or other departments could sort of take hold of and sort of formulate their entire, you know, their entire program events around connection to that idea. Mm-hmm. So I think so. I think it's possible.
Yeah. Peggy?
Well, and actually, Christopher did replicate the model on a smaller scale in the last, for the last 2 years, with his class on Introduction to Smart Cities, which is excellent example.
Fair enough.
An excellent example of a multidisciplinary topic. Smart Cities addresses all sorts of different areas. And so what Christopher did was essentially run a similar model, having folks from across campus come in and do brown bags on smart cities that was relevant to their particular interest area, thus giving the students essentially the same exposure to faculty across campus, but also to a topic that actually no one person could have really done justice to, but certainly professors from different areas across campus could. And so we have sort of tried that approach for our students as well.
Mm-hmm. And when you, do you know of any other universities or programs that are doing something similar to this that maybe you used as a little bit of a inspiration or something where you saw someone doing something and said, hey, we could model something after that? Or is this kind of distinctive to UW-Parkside?
As far as I know, this is distinctive to us. And one reason why we'll say that and also why maybe other colleges haven't been able to do it is that it is a lot of work. It takes a lot of coordination, a lot of logistical work that has to be done way before this starts. And so it becomes a real effort during the semester. So, for instance, when Christopher ran this, he had primary responsibility for this last time. I believe there were something like 42 events that were during the semester. Mm-hmm. That takes a great deal of coordination, but I don't believe it should be done if you can't do that sort of consistent effort. And I think it's difficult to get students interested in a topic if you give them one presentation or one event or even one a month in order for them to really begin to feel that it's integrated into their very semester life. They have to see it everywhere, and that's one of the things I think that is very successful about the election experience, is that students and campus and even the community really can't get away from it. We have something going on everywhere that will remind someone. To the point of every time we do this, we actually make buttons for particular events that people can, and we pass those out. And so just walking down the hall, you will see, last time we used to see students who had them all in their backpack. So, you know, it's sort of an organic and it's just integrated into the entire fall semester. That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, so I do believe that what Parkside is doing in regards to this is fairly unique, but I'm worried about overstating it a little bit. There are other universities that do something similar, where they have some speakers come in and they organize a couple of events. From what Peggy and I have seen when we've gone looking for this in various ways, nobody has the number and expanse of events that we have. And the groups and the schools that do have these similar style things, they always have a whole committee that actually sets it up. Like they have like 6 or 8 people involved in organizing the thing, whereas pretty much every time it's Peggy and I who are doing it. And so yeah, and Peggy's right. I mean, we in the fall semester when we've done this in the past, we've had a minimum of 2 events per week, and that's a minimum of 2 events, right? To get to 42 events in the semester, you know, in a 14-week semester, we're clearly doing more than 2 a week. And it is everywhere. And some of the events are, I mean, they're called events, but we shouldn't think of them as things that are like limited in time. They sort of exist on campus for a period of time. So, you know, when we did the historic headlines event, or then the next time we did the political, the presidential losers event, or we had political posters that were sort of created, like these things get hung across campus and are there for an extended period of time. So some of those events are not like 1 hour on a Tuesday. they're kind of ubiquitous and around. And I actually, I've never even really considered the buttons as an event. That was, I always just saw those as being a kind of fun thing to do to hand out to events. Mm-hmm. Because the buttons always represent the event itself. Like, so if you came to the brown bags, you got a button for the brown bags. And that was inspired just by, you know, buttons at political rallies, right? Like, that's one of the most famous thing when you go back in time, you know, I like Ike or something, right? Like, everybody keeps their buttons. And so it was kind of inspired by that idea that we give out these buttons. And so, but yeah, the buttons themselves are an event because by the end of the semester, some students have 10 or 12 of them if they've been coming to all the events. So yeah, I guess to recap that, Parkside is fairly unique in this, even though there are some schools that do something similar.
And I think from the perspective of someone who's not, you know, haven't taken the class as a staff member, but you certainly know that the election experience is going on, and whether it's the buttons or the posters in the concourse or whatever, it's not like, it's probably not like another course that I can remember where there's as much awareness or information out during that time period throughout campus.
Yeah, in that sense, I'm actually kind of even reluctant to call it a course, because I guess one thing that hasn't been mentioned in this discussion is literally every event for the course is open to the public. In fact, every single event takes place not just with students in the class, but with members of the public and the community. So staff members come to the events, community members come to the events. There is no one meeting of the course in which it's only people who are going to get graded for it. There's some online component where the students have to turn in reflections. That's the only component that the staff or that the community members won't see. Otherwise, the entire design and existence of the course is about that relationship between the students, staff, and the community together. And so so from their perspective, there's really no difference between the experience that a student has with it and the experience that staff or community mm-hmm. might have with it.
Mm-hmm. I kind of hesitate to go down this path, but I'm going to go down this path anyway, and we'll see where it ends up. With unfortunately, with the different way that society is interacting today with one another during the COVID pandemic, and the uncertainty of how long the society is the way it is right now in here in May and June of 2020, as you look toward the fall semester and courses and things being online, have you thought about what the election experience might look like if the fall semester was more of a virtual online semester, or if it was some sort of hybrid, or have you thought about that?
Yeah.
I'll start with this because I'm pretty positive about it. For one, I know we're going to do it. It's something that is a signature event for our college, and it's something that actually people expect. And so I know that we're going to do it. We have absolutely thought about how it might be different in various kinds of environments. For instance, one of our speakers who has agreed to come for the fall is Charles Franklin from the Marquette University Law School polls. Oh, always a fan favorite. Yeah. You know, he's come and done this for us every year. So we're really pleased he's going to do it again. He was concerned because, as he says, he's not a young fella. and he wasn't sure about whether or not, even if we opened up campus, that he wanted to expose himself to a large group of people at that time. Mm-hmm. Reasonable. But what he's agreed to do is to Skype it in, and we're going to Skype it in the cinema, which, because it's got such a big screen, actually takes that image and makes it, you know, larger than life, so makes it actually really interactive. Yeah. So we're already planning that, regardless of what happens, is that, you know, that's how we're going to arrange that. I think that it will be a different approach. We're going to have to really spend a lot more time in the summer figuring out how our platform can be much more integrated with students. But I think if we do it right, that this could be the unifying activity that would exist across the fall semester. In other words, worst case scenario, we're online. Well, it's difficult to draw students in, and certainly having one event would be really difficult. But having something that is ubiquitous, digitally even, you know, that we can actually have essentially the same idea of putting those posters out and doing things like that, I think that we really could be extraordinarily successful in pulling off an engaged fall semester through the election experience.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I think obviously some things are going to have to change, right? Like, I think that would just be the case. And so some of those changes are going to be easy in a certain sense to do, right? I think the brown bags we'll absolutely be able to still pull off, right? That those will be recorded presentations by the individuals who are experts in their field talking about how it relates. They'll probably be recorded. Obviously, we're going to have to do something different than we would do for almost any other class, because normally what we would do is kind of what all three of us are doing right now, except we'd use a thing called Collaborate Ultra inside our Canvas platform for the students to participate. But members of the community can't actually get in on that. So we're going to clearly have to find some different way to achieve that. Mm-hmm. I think one thing we're absolutely going to lose is the concourse. It might sound weird, but so much of what the election experience was doing was taking advantage of that concourse on campus, which every single student walks down. And, you know, we're going to lose that if we're online. And we can attempt to, you know, do a simulacrum of that or something. But obviously, they're just going to have to be some things that are going to be different. But there are some aspects of it which we're going to be able to pull off, I think, in a very similar and useful fashion. But, you know, it's the way the world is, and it's the things we're going to have to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this gets a little off topic, but I'm interested, Christopher, in your perspective on with the end of the spring 2020 semester being online and summer courses going online, how as a faculty member, and I don't know the answer to the question I'm going to ask, is if you have taught an online course before, or if this is the kind of the first time that you've been in that arena. But I'm interested in your perspective on how that changes for faculty members.
That's an excellent question. I have taught online before. So I teach in the Masters of Professional Studies program, which is an online program. Mm-hmm. And so all the classes in there are online. So I do have an online class in there, professional ethics. I'll be teaching one this summer on ethics and data technology, which is a timely course to be teaching at this particular point. But most of my classes are actually not online. In fact, most of my classes are discussion based. And so moving them online has been a challenge, and moving them online in such a short period of time has been a real challenge. And I personally am finding it just on the brink of overwhelming. For the amount of time and effort that it is taking to do all that. Speaking to many of my colleagues, you know, some are doing better than others. All of them recognize that some of their classes are more conducive to being moved online than others. You know, it's interesting to hear some of them talking. Some of them find that their upper division classes are harder to move online, while others find their upper division classes are easier to move online. It's a lot to do with the content. It's a lot. It's difficult. Obviously, classes that were designed to be online from the start are better, are going to be better.
Sure.
Classes,
sure.
The ad hoc manner in which we've had to sort of put this together. I was chatting with a friend of mine who's a professor who actually specializes in online education, and just sort of like letting him know some of my concerns. Interestingly, he thought he was telling me something that wasn't very helpful, but I found very extremely helpful. I find myself kind of alienated from my students at the moment, that because I don't have any real connection to them, that they're just voices on a screen. I feel like that they're very far away from me.
Yeah.
And apparently that's a very common response. And so I feel better that it's not some, I was worried that I wasn't doing a good enough job designing my class, that it was a failing on my part, in putting my class together. And, It's not. It's common. So yay, that. I've tried to be sensitive to my students. I've tried to ask them to make sure how they're holding up. As you might expect, some of them are holding up better than others. Social isolation is hurting more than others. You know, some are having to work extra. We have a number of students at Parkside who are in the healthcare field who have had to pick up extra shifts. So it's definitely impacting some better than others. A lot of the students I have, and I think this is a self-selecting group, so we should be careful about it. A lot of the students I have really preferred in-person classes. And I say this because the kinds of classes I teach are largely gen eds. The students had the opportunity to take those as online. That is, to fulfill their humanities credit, they could have taken an online humanities, but they chose an in-person class. And so the switch for them has been very disappointing. That they would prefer. Most of my students have said that they look forward to coming back online. But again, I want to point out that's a self-selecting group. If we ask the students who were always online how they feel about being online, they do generally highlight some positives. I have made a point to make my class asynchronous rather than synchronous. Again, because my students' schedules have now changed, even though they signed up for a class at 9:30, they now have to work at the pharmacy at 9:30 in the morning. So I've tried to make sure that my students aren't required to be anywhere at any particular time. So, you know, they like the freedom of their schedule, being able to organize it the way they want. They are admitting that they're having a harder time focusing, both because of the coronavirus, but also because it's just kind of hard to focus when you don't have any real things demarcating the points in your day. You know, 8 a.m. is not really different from 1 p.m., you know, like it just kind of goes on. I mean, I find myself working until 10 o'clock at night and finally realizing I didn't make dinner. So, and our students are experiencing that too. So there are quite a number of challenges in moving everything online. The students have indicated to me that they're kind of pleasantly surprised at how successful it has been, while recognizing that everybody is sort of struggling through the process.
I mean, for me, the biggest, and Peggy and I were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, most of what I do, I can do it just fine here off campus. Certainly the social interaction is much different. But the weird part is, I don't think in my career I've ever wondered what day it is so much. So I get up and I think, what's today? Is it a Wednesday? Is it a Tuesday? What day is it? And it's, at first I thought, oh, it's just a weird thing. And it's like, no, it just keeps, I don't know what day it is.
That's actually hilarious, because when people ask me about that, I kind of point out, I was like, well, it just reminds me of January, because, you know, as a faculty member here at Parkside, because we have a winter term, if you're not teaching a winter term, January is just kind of there. And I regularly lose track of what day it is in January. So this just kind of reminds me of January. I'm like, I think I only know what day it is now, because when I log into email, I actually got the update that we had a meeting today. Otherwise, it's like, is it Sunday? I don't know.
It's Sunday. So, well,
no idea.
I appreciate both of you taking time to talk with us on Parkside today. Best of luck with the very successful election experience, however that looks come this fall, and good luck with the rest of the spring semester. As both of you work through the challenges of moving completely online, and as you pointed out, Christopher, doing so in a very rushed timeline, not something where you had a lot of opportunity to plan, and from what I hear, the Parkside faculty did an amazing job of getting the number of courses moved to online that they had to do. We've been talking with Dr. Peggy James, Dean of the College of Social Sciences and Professional Studies, and Dr. Christopher Hudspeth, Associate Professor of Philosophy here at UW-Parkside. Peggy and Christopher, thank you. To hear past editions of Parkside Today, visit uwp.edu/parkside today. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.